Good day, patrons. How are you? It is just about 12 minutes to showtime, and Sarah's back. Oh, wait, she's not at her desk. I didn't notice that before I said that. No, really, I promise. She's really back. Brian Brushwood's here, too. Oh, he's not at his desk either. Roger. Oh, thank goodness. They'll think I'm crazy otherwise.
I'm no Sarah Lane, but
But yes, Sarah is back.
Hello. This is my sultry DTNS voice.
She sounds better than that. She's saving. You're saving it. That's good. Slightly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Save it up. You said you're feeling better. It just voice isn't quite.
You know, I was never feeling so bad. It was just, I mean, the last time I lost my voice was like a decade ago. You know, it's a weird thing when that happens. I don't have bronchial issues ever. Yeah, so yeah. I just kind of get worried about
it. Just happens. Yeah. Happens randomly. It happened to me at CES one year and everybody's like, it's because of CES. I'm like, I've been to CES and now I've been to CES even more. It only happened that one year. Who knows why?
Well, what did you do? Because you had to work.
Went out with Will Harris and got scotch.
You think that was the problem?
Possibly, yeah. That's what Eileen thinks.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the night before, so it's Friday. On Wednesday night, a friend of mine who lives in Amsterdam was in town. We went out to dinner. And it was like, you know, you get around people that you haven't seen in a while and you get like, and then let me tell you about this story. So it's like we were talking a lot, but we weren't yelling.
No.
You know, so it's like when I woke up yesterday, like, ooh, yeah, something's up. It was like, it seemed like something else.
Combination probably, right? Like
probably.
You probably were already coming down with something and then you add the talking on top of that. And
I will say, you know, of all the problems my apartment has, and you guys have heard them all, it also doesn't have great insulation. So when it's, you know, 55 degrees outside in LA, it's not that cold, but it's pretty cold inside my house.
You know,
and I think that, you know, it's like I just kind of, ugh.
My rear neighbor, I've mentioned my rear neighbor before. She's awesome. And her nephew, I guess, lives above her. It's my landlord's cousin. Anyway, they've been doing some rewiring over there. And I guess my next door neighbor on the other side of me is annoyed with the sawing and hammering, because this morning I hear him, this is before I've even gotten out of bed, I hear him yelling down at them as they're walking in. I could hear them kind of going through the alleyway. I hear him like, it's raining. You don't do construction when it's raining.
I'll tell that to my neighbors.
I know. And I didn't hear what they said back to him, but he just, then I heard him laugh and I was like, okay, so he's not being mean about it. But
Right. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They have water stainless steel tools, so it doesn't rust.
Well, yeah. And the wiring they're doing is inside. Like, they're not going to be out working out in the rain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not about like patching up.
Yeah, they're not doing electrical work outside in the rain. It'd be a bad idea.
Well, hello, beautiful people.
See, I told you Brian Brushwood was here. It's all true.
You just wished it, and it became true.
Actually, it was funny. I started the recording, and I said, Sarah Lane's here. And then I was like, oh, I didn't realize she'd walked away. And I'm like, but Brian Brushwood was here. Oh, he's walked away too, which I actually do.
Like, the whole first minute is you'd be like, guys, I promise. They're really here. I swear.
I'm not crazy.
They'll be on the show, I promise. So, Raj, I just because I'm trying to not strain too much, maybe you want to, I don't know.
Amp you, amplify you.
Yeah, amp me, bro.
Just be careful that if. You have earphones in, so
please amp me, bro.
Generally, what happens is if you have speakers or some sort of a speaker monitoring system, when I do that, it amplifies what goes in.
I think we've figured out that whole thing. I can't wait to show you guys my new Ethernet whole thing.
Nice. I'm excited.
Wait a minute, maybe that's how you got sick. You're doing work.
There were some sleeping viruses in her wall.
No, this happened before. Like, I did that silently yesterday where I was like, what do I do with my life if I can't talk? I guess I'll do the Ethernet project.
Oh, look at you.
yeah.
Nice resting up there.
It wasn't. I mean, that's not physically draining. No, you're standing really on a chair or two for a few minutes.
Well, that's good. It means you're not feeling horrible.
No, it's
as my grandpa used to say, if you can lay Ethernet cable, you're doing all right.
as my grandpa used to say, you feeling bad? Have some whiskey. You'll wake up well.
My grandfather used to tell me, don't kick me. And for some reason, he thought I was kicking him, and then he pinched my cheek really hard.
Ooh, I don't like that.
My grandpa put whiskey in his cough medicine. This is one of those stories about like grandpa's secret cough medicine recipe that, you know, we all knew had whiskey in it, but he wouldn't let anybody see him make it, and it worked really well. He never wrote it down. Nobody knows what it is.
How do we know it worked really well?
Because we used it.
Oh. Oh. Okay.
Yeah, it was a grandpa's secret cough medicine that only he drank in the corner, which was really just Jack Daniels with a brown bag around it.
But there was whiskey in it?
There was whiskey in it, a little bit, yeah.
Did it have Robitussin in it?
I don't know. I don't know what was in it.
My grandparents were, they were very fond of whiskey as a, basically like it's Robitussin. It wasn't given to the children. Children weren't allowed to have it. It was like, you know.
Oh, we had they put cream de menthe on our gums when we were kids.
That sounds kind of good, actually.
There was the cough medicine that had a little bit of whiskey. It wasn't a lot. But there's this German cough drop that I'm pretty sure, when I've tasted it, it reminds me of that cough medicine. So I'm pretty sure he melted it down.
Heroin, Tom.
That's what it is. It's a German thing. Heroin.
Black tar.
Felt great. Didn't care about my cough at all.
That's the weirdest thing is that heroin was, number one, it genuinely does cure your coughs.
Yeah. And
number
two,
it was created and marketed and sold as a cough drug.
Really?
Yeah. Heroin, the name comes from the medicine's heroic properties, according to the Bayer Company.
That makes perfect sense.
Is it because it relaxes you so you don't cough anymore? So it's not really curing anything? You're just like...
I just went through a pretty bad cough after having the flu.
Yes. And it's
there are certain systems like that impulse to cough is something that can be depressed by opioids. And so as a result, you get either opioids or, oh man.
How do you know this, Brian?
Benzonactate. Because I looked up all the side effects on my cough medicine. And I'm like, Jesus, what am I putting in me? It's some intense stuff.
When I was a kid, I always used to get Triaminic. You guys remember Triaminic?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
It was kind of orange and tasted fruity, but like kind of gross.
They all tasted gross.
Yeah. But like I kind of liked it because it was sort of candy and you could get it, you know, as like a special occasion if you were sick enough. Basically, I think it was basically just like a way to get kids to go to sleep. I don't know what it was doing otherwise.
Luden's cough drops
are
great.
Oh, I used to get those.
They didn't do anything, but they tasted really good.
I'm starting the broadcast.
Okay.
I used to get this really thick, syrupy, sweet, thick syrup. Like it was Chinese medicine for coughs. I don't know. It had the viscosity of molasses.
Ooh.
So you would just like a tablespoon. Yeah, that was great.
That's actually what my grandpa's cough medicine kind of tasted like. It had whorehound in it.
What's that?
At least I think it did. He never told
us. Doesn't sound good.
It sounds like a...
Whorehound is like a brown sugar honey cough drop thingy.
It's not the same whorehound I was thinking of.
Yeah. No.
No.
It's not the one Robert Johnson used to sing about.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, the blues musician, Robert Johnson.
Is he friends with... Who's the...
Whorehound.
Linda Ronstadt, another person I'm like... Who sings?
No, Robert Johnson, you know, he's from the 30s, so I think he was dead long before Linda Ronstadt was born.
Right.
You know, from my youth.
Sure, yeah. In the 1930s when you were 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Linda Ronstadt, well, not speaking of Linda Ronstadt at all, but speaking of people where I'm like, very, very popular person, but I couldn't name one song, Barbra Streisand.
Oh.
Memories.
Yeah.
Is that the Cats song? Yentl. Memories?
Yeah. Did you ever know that you're my
that one?
No. That's that's
Funny
that's,
Face.
No. That's the hero person is Bette Midler.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Man, maybe I don't know who Barbra Streisand is. I just realized I don't know who Barbra Streisand is.
You don't know a single song she sings because neither do I.
Oh, well, because I only know her from acting. I know that she's, man, in the 80s, it was a cliche that she was popular in the gay community. Is that right? Or am I thinking of Bette Midler still?
No, I think both. I think both okay. would be considered icons, theater, kind of, you know.
God, I can't remember. I can't tell.
I can't speak with authority on this, really.
Hmm.
So, none of us know. None of us know any of her songs. But she's a big deal.
I just named a bunch of them.
Memories from Cats? Is it Barbara Streisand song?
Well, this is the problem with Barbara Streisand, which is probably why we're having a hard time. Is she sang a lot of songs that other people always sang. Her 1963 record of the year, which, by the way, I don't know this. I'm looking it up, was Happy Days Are Here Again.
Okay. I kind of know that song.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a traditional. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, and then You Don't Bring Me Flowers with Neil Diamond.
I don't bring my wife flowers.
Wait, I just realized all the patrons know that you're not vigorously practicing all the headlines right before each episode now.
Yes, correct.
Because this is not how I thought last minute prep went for this program. It's been odd.
We've changed it a little. It's a lot of talking about cough drops now.
Cough drops, aging celebrities, our own health issues.
All right, it's 1:30 though. We should probably do the show.
That's
memory, not memories.
Got so not the Cat song.
No, I don't.
I don't know. Someone tell me if it's the Cat song or not, because that's a great song.
Yeah, it's a different song. Different song.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Brian, are you ready?
No, but I'm prepared. No, I mean, I'm not prepared, but I'm ready.
But you're
ready.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here,
just wing it, Brian. Just
we
wing it.
Go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by you. Yeah. No, I mean you. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, March 2nd, 2018, from DTNS headquarters in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And with a voice a little lower than normal, but feeling better, from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And do I jump in or
yes.
No?
Yes.
It's been so long. It's been so long, I don't remember the format, Tom. You got to guide me through this.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you from Austin, Texas, Brian Brushwood.
Feels good. Yay. Feels good. It's like when you hang out with your old dorm mates and then they're rich now and they drive.
Man, I wish.
I wish I was rich.
I wish my old dorm mate was rich. That's our producer, Roger Chang, there as well. Roger, people Hello. Are saying they would like you to introduce yourself. How do you feel about
My
that?
My name is Roger. I'm the producer of the show, and I would also like to be rich.
Okay. Well, let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Instagram may have plans for voice and video calling based on Android application packages, or APKs, that show files and icons called call and video call. Yeah, often we see these before they end up being actual features. Back in January, an image of a video call button was also spotted by the blog WA Beta Info. So if we're keeping score, because we know that Instagram has aped a few of Snapchat's features in the past, Snapchat first launched video calling in 2014.
Meanwhile, on Wednesday, a 1.35 terabits per second DDoS attack hit GitHub. It's the most powerful distributed denial of service attack recorded to date. GitHub sought help from its DDoS mitigation service, Akamai Prolexic. After 8 minutes, the attack dropped off.
Users of Akamai Prolexic should seek a doctor after 10 minutes of DDoS. yesterday, we mentioned software engineer Loretta Lee was suing her former employee, Google, and we recapped the suits from James Damore and Tim Chevalier. Add another one to the list. Former YouTube recruiter Arne Wilberg now claims he was terminated in retaliation for complaining to HR about hiring practices, particularly discriminatory hiring practices. All right, let's talk a little more about birds. I mean, angry birds. What's going on, Brian?
Well, Rovio, the maker of Angry Birds games, reported Q4 earnings below estimates and announced it will close its year-old London-based games development office. The head of the games unit, Wilhelm Tatt, will be also leaving the company. The earnings report cited heavy competition and an increased cost of user acquisition as two reasons for the shortfall. Full year revenue was up by 56%, and the company made a profit in Q4. Rovio said it will continue to invest in Hatch Entertainment, a subsidiary that is building a cloud-based streaming service. You guys remember when, unironically, with a straight face, Rovio was saying they're going to be the next Disney? And I don't know if that was just bluff and bluster of the time. Maybe that was the right move when you have, you know, all this cash that you're swimming in. But it sounds a little ambitious for a slingshot game now.
I mean, Rovio, or Angry Birds, rather, had a Disney-type feature film. It was, you know, it was a big deal at a certain point. I think a lot of us who have seen these sorts of things rise and fall very quickly. I always think of Zynga, you know, as a great example of something where it's like, can't lose, but you did eventually. I wonder about the London office only being open for a year. That seems pretty quick. Otherwise, I'm just not surprised.
Well, 50 years from now, the documentary will say, then, in 2018, things didn't look good for Rovio. If you asked people then, they would have said. Yeah.
The narrator says things weren't good.
Yeah. I wonder, because they're making money, right? And they're a mobile game company that is sort of out of the spotlight right now, and they're making money. It's only that they have this quarterly, you know, public company treadmill that they have to keep feeding, that it looks bad for them right now. If they were private, I think they would just be doubling down on the cloud stuff. They would be continuing to feed their battle game, which is an MMO that isn't reliant on the birds part of the franchise. So I see a lot to like in Rovio. It's just not the kind of stuff that makes them popular.
The Light Phone. Everyone remember this? This was the crowdfunded product released last year as a simplified handset without internet access, without texting support or email or even a camera to take photos. Crazy. But people kind of liked it, right? Because it simplified your addiction to your handset. Is adding some new features for its next generation. The Light Phone 2 will include an e-ink touchscreen, 4G support, tech support. Now, Light doesn't expect to ship the new model until April 2019. Worth noting, though, that the original handset was delayed, supposed to launch in 2016, did not launch until 2017. So that, you know, might you want to take that date with a grain of salt. Light Phone 2 is available to back on Indiegogo for the early bird price of $225. Eventually expects to sell for $400, which is middle of the road for a handset, but for something that deliberately keeps away features in order to make your life more simple, I personally would want it to be cheaper.
Well, this is the brilliant thing about their marketing is that they're not positioning this as a less than phone. They're positioning it as a diet phone. They're saying you're consumed with junk food and this is a problem. We will sell you the solution, and we don't expect solutions to junk food to be cheap. And I think that's smart. What I do think is really interesting is if you look at the crowdfunding site on their Indiegogo, scroll down about like one third down and you'll see a picture that sort of sketches out what they imagine. They're like, and it's just a timeline. And on the left, it says one thing, and it's the Light Phone. And on the right, it says too many things, and it says a smartphone. And then slightly to the right of one thing, it says, this is what we're aiming for, a few things. And even more fascinating, and this is the mark of somebody who is experienced in crowdfunding, they are very precise about the things that they are and are not claiming to do. So if you scroll down even farther, it'll say, yes, you will be able to call, message, context, alarm, and auto reply. No, you'll never be able to do social media, advertising, email, or news. Maybe, if possible and makes sense, I don't know, maybe directions, maybe ride sharing, maybe a playlist, maybe weather, maybe voice command, or a calculator, or a dictionary, maybe. And I think this is a really smart play on what they're doing. This is an untapped market. The idea of a diet cell phone, I think, has tremendous potential. But the question is are they rushing to the mushy middle where they're just a crippled smartphone, or are they pioneering a brand new category?
Yeah, because the original Light Phone was almost an accessory. They really heavily emphasized the call forwarding part of it. Like, still get your calls, but not have to carry that phone that's going to distract you or you know, is going to be a real problem in rain or whatever, or might get lost or whatever. This one is in that middle, and I almost feel like it would be better if they said, yes, it will do text messaging now, but it's still just an accessory, not, well, maybe we might do this or that, because then I start to wonder.
They clearly said text messaging is in there, but the maybe direct stuff is more of the ride sharings and directions and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm saying they should have just stopped with the yeses, no maybes.
I don't know. I think that might be a really smart thing, because what it cues is that we're listening. We want to hear what you want.
Right. They're listening to your calls. No, that's not what they said. Sources tell Cheddar that Snap will launch a second version of its spectacle glasses this year, and then a third version with two cameras in 2019. This reminded me that Evan Spiegel has been saying Snap is a camera company, not a social network. Second-gen spectacles are said to be water-resistant, according to these sources, and would come in new colors and have performance improvements. The third speculated spectacles would feature a new design and two cameras to allow some 3D-like effects in your videos. Snap announced last year it lost $40 million on the original spectacles, sold 150,000 pairs, and has a huge inventory of unsold units.
You know, it's funny. I live in the same city that Snapchat has its headquarters. A lot of people around me work at Snapchat. You can just tell. You can just smell it. And for a while, they were all wearing spectacles. I don't see any spectacles, even on people that I assume are Snapchat employees. So, you know, this whole the whole spectacles thing was interesting, intriguing. They were kind of ugly. Sorry for anybody who liked them. Weren't for me. Never got a pair of my own. And there have been little kiosks down on the boardwalk that have, I don't know, they were there for a while and they're not there anymore. And so the idea that Snapchat hoped to sell a lot more of them, you know, besides sort of this novel idea when it first came out where people were like, that's cool and different. Camera company, huh? Look at Snap. I don't know anybody who wants this.
Well, I'll tell you what. So I was not very dialed in on the spectacles phenomenon, but I assume it was marketed as this is a way to share your life. This is a way to share things or whatever. And in marketing, fear moves more units than joy. And so what they're saying is you have joy, share that joy. If you want to move these, you market them the way like a Russian dash cam. You say at some point in your life, you will witness something that nobody will ever believe. This is your insurance. Spend this $200 now, wear these ridiculous glasses, and when that moment happens, you will have viral gold. You will be the one to show the asteroid crashing into the ground or whatever that once in a lifetime. Like at some point, you will have a once in a lifetime moment, and wouldn't it be a shame if it wasn't on video and just by having, you know, like just a last 30 seconds ability to recover. Oh, wait, is it me?
Nope, it's Sarah.
Oh, got it.
Toyota's investing more than $2.8 billion in a new Tokyo-based venture to develop software for self-driving cars. 1,000 employees, including new hires, will staff the operation, and English will be the main business language. Toyota will have 90% stake with part suppliers Denso Corp and Asian Sikke Co., each holding 5%.
I think this is important because this is what a company looks like before you're having the conversation of car companies didn't adapt to technology fast enough. Now they're trying to stop autonomous cars. Now they're trying to do this. Instead of being cable companies, instead of being music companies, a lot of car companies, not just Toyota, are becoming new kinds of companies. Toyota's like, we're going to be a software company. We're also going to be a research company. They have an R&D outfit in Silicon Valley. Like Toyota is making those moves now to not just be a car company in the future. And they haven't been for a long time. Granted, I know that they have lots of arms that aren't directly related to manufacturing, but I guess I should say they're continuing that.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe it's a side effect of the society that we live in where ideas spread so very, very quickly. But it does take a rocket scientist to know that this is the future, that people aren't going to be driving their own cars all the time. We got other things that we want to direct our attention to, except for when we want to drive for pleasure, in which case we'll go to a park and drive around in a circle for pleasure or whatever.
Yeah. And Toyota may be saying, we want to sell the software to the future other car makers besides just us. Because that's where you make the money. A market research report from OC&C Strategy Consultants predicts voice shopping will grow $40 billion in the US and UK by 2022. Now, granted, these research things often say things, right? But it is a $2 billion market right now. 13% of U.S. homes have a smart speaker, and 36% of those homes use them to buy stuff. In the U.K., 10% of households have the speakers, and about 16% of those shop on them. Smart speaker owners tend to be young, they tend to be wealthy, and they tend to have kids. So that would sort of imply that, you know, as they continue to grow older, they'll continue to shop in this way, and maybe their kids will learn to also.
So,
dang, I wish I was one of those people, young, wealthy, with children.
Buy a smart speaker and you'll become that.
I tried. It hasn't happened yet.
15 years ago, I had a Panasonic candy bar phone, and I, for the very first time, used SMS to, or whatever was built in on it, to buy a book on Amazon, and it took about 5 whole minutes, but I did it at the bar without going anywhere, and it actually got bought and the book got delivered. It was a giant pain in the butt, and I remember thinking, man, if only this was shorter and easier, I'd probably do this all the time. Likewise, last year, in the middle of cooking stir fry, I shouted out to my Amazon device, whose name I will not say. I said, hey, I need more MSG. And she said, well, the last time you bought it, it was this other stuff. Here's a replacement brand. It's this much. Do you want it? I'm like, yeah, go ahead. And I've not done it since, but it occurred to me, man, that was a plodding, tedious, slowly executed conversation. If it was just fast, if it was as fast as, hey, Tom, I need MSG. And you're like, okay, no, but the old one's not there. Do you have but the new one is this much. Is that okay? Yeah, that's great. If it was literally that short, and I think it will be in a matter of years, I think it could be the biggest thing.
Yeah, I don't shop by voice because of what you're talking about, because I don't want to have to get in a conversation and clarify things and end up getting the wrong thing and then have to return it. I don't want to have to follow up. But once it becomes as easy as you're describing, I'll be in. I really will.
And I don't use shopping lists with my, well, it's a Sono speaker, but you know who I'm talking to, the A-Name. Although I understand how it works, but I have started to take an inventory of things that seem very obvious to me that she should know that she's not getting right. So it's like, and I mean, I complain about this with Siri as well, but it's the whole, if there's a particular basketball game on and I ask you what the score is and you tell me what the next game, when the next game is going to be 3 days from now, it's like, okay, well, you don't really understand me yet.
Yeah. I do use the shopping list part, just not the shopping order something for me part.
Yeah. I mean, which is, easy enough as long as they understand what you're trying to order.
Tell our groceries to add chocolate chips to shopping list is what I say. And then it does it. folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. Available on the Amazon Echo, Google Home, and Anchor app, as well as in your podcasting app. That's dailytechheadlines.com.
So we've got sort of good news and bad news and a lot of stuff to talk about as far as ride-hailing services are concerned. A new report titled Driving Toward Equality, Women, Ride-Hailing, and the Sharing Economy suggests that ride-hailing platforms, Uber, Careem, Taxify, some of these companies you might know, some of them you might not because it was detailing a lot of different metro areas besides within the U.S., are boosting women's income, particularly in South Africa and Egypt, but in other companies as well. The report by the World Bank's International Finance Corporation suggests that ride-hailing apps ease women's entry into the transport industry. So I guess, if you think of it in terms of these sort of incumbent industries where most truck drivers are not women, that's kind of a good thing, right? It's easing some borders that have been in there for some time. However, drivers for ride-hailing companies Uber and Lyft get a medium profit of $3.37 per share, and that's before taxes. A research study by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology studied analyzed fiscal data from about 1,100 independent contractors, independent contract drivers. According to the report, under 75% of drivers earned less than the prevailing minimum wage in their state. 30% said they lose money when you account for vehicle expenses. Wow.
So 70% are making money.
No, 25% of them are.
30% said they lose money, so that means 70% are making money.
Oh, right. Well, they're actually coming home with a positive gross income. But, a lot of these arguments say, well, it's like once you factor in the damage done to the car and the time invested and this and that, it's all what a math. You go to Whataburger, you get one thing, somehow you spend $20. When you're in the business of telling other people what they should do with their time, it's easy for you to say, oh, but you don't realize that you're going to pay taxes. You don't realize that you're running down your car by operating it and all this stuff. But I'm going to say this. Let's say 100% of them are making less than the minimum wage. These are all rational actors, and they're doing it for some reason. And I can run a thought experiment where it's like, would I rather make minimum wage at McDonald's, or would I rather make slightly less than minimum wage, calling my own shots, picking up my own fares, deciding where I want to go, when I want to go, driving as much or as little in my own car, It's like I can be like, yeah, I'm okay with that. And that's
well, but $3.37 is more than slightly under minimum wage for most areas of the U.S.
Yeah, yes. I don't. I mean,
that's quite low.
$3.37 per hour. If you didn't catch that, folks.
Yeah,
it's so
that's
low.
$0.02 more per hour than I made when I started working at the radio station in 1986.
It's 13 cents less than I made as a fry cook at the age of 15.
I mean, when I was 16, the minimum wage in California was $4.25 because that's what I made.
So
this is low. It's low.
That number is so incredibly low that it really makes me want to explore how they came to it and whether or not it reflects people who are doing 40-hour weeks or whether it includes people, you know, looky-loos who maybe do 2 or 3 hours a week or something like that.
Well, no, they analyzed fiscal data from 1,100 independent contract drivers. So it's raw data. And I think what it gets to is that there is a way to make money as a driver, but not everybody's going to make that. And yes, they're all sort of rational actors. I bet a lot of this has to do with people saying, let me try this. Not for me. There's a lot of turnover among drivers who try it out and say, okay, this is not working. And I've taken enough rides and talked to enough different drivers that some are definitely making it work for them, but there is a trick to it. And I don't think it has to do so much with they don't know that they have to, you know, include vehicle costs and things like that. It's just a matter of how you drive and where you drive and whether the demand's there and how many other cars there are on the road, et cetera.
And really, you know, especially in LA, because a lot of people have side jobs, right? It's like trying to be an actor, but I'm a waitress as well. Great. You know, you're in good company. But I think for a lot of folks saying, I got 3 hours to kill, you know, I've got this job on the side. That is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, even if you're not making a ton of money doing it, it's supplemental income. If you want that to be your actual salary, depending on how much money you need to bring in every month. I mean, it sounds somewhat dismal at the same time, because this all seems to be a stopgap until autonomous vehicles end up, you know, being the fleet that we're using,
sure.
You know, like sooner than later, you know, I mean, I kind of feel for these people who are hoping that this will be their livelihood. It doesn't sound like for the majority of them, it's bringing in, you know, the money that they probably hoped.
So
it also sounds like it's going away pretty soon.
Let's look at the positive sides of all of this. Let's say that it's nobody's career, but it's a wonderful transitional opportunity. If you're somebody who worked out of the house or you have a loved one to take care of or you're inexperienced in the workplace, unlimited flexibility on your hours, unlimited flexibility on the ability to, you know, to be listening to self-help informational materials or whatever. I'm assuming I'm making that part up. But it makes me think of there was a paper from Stanford called The Gender Earnings Gap in the Gig Economy, evidence from over 1 million rideshare drivers. And you would think in a completely automated app environment where it just matches people and gender is not a factor across the board, you would think both men and women would make the same amount, that there would be no gender pay gap. But instead, they found one. And there's a fascinating, about an hour-long piece at Freakonomics.com that's very worth listening, where they break down what are all the reasons that would account for a gender pay gap. And much like in the workforce, women tend to prefer they tend to value flexibility of schedule over men. And so they say that factors in. They also figured out that as drivers, men tend to be more comfortable speeding than women. So as a result, men tend to scoop up more fares than women. But at the very end, they kick it, you know, the gap as they figure out each of the different vectors got smaller and smaller. And then they said, and none of this data factors in tipping, in which case we know that that tipping has biases of its own, and women tend to get better tips than men. And so the question posed at the end of this Freakonomics episode is, wouldn't it be strange if the addition of tipping made that pay gap go to zero based on a equivalent playing field?
Yeah, and now that Uber has tipping in the app as well, which Lyft had from the beginning, I think, at least for a long time, then we'll be able to look at that data. That'll be really interesting. GPEG also points out that one of the problems is you're paid per job, not by hour. So comparing it to an hourly wage has a little bit of oranges and apples element as well, because you may be fine making less over the period of time because you can sit parked and read a book for a while. This would be time that you would spend down anyway. And like you said, Brian, you're monetizing it as a supplemental income. I'm really curious what Sakani Wright, who writes the Your Private Driver column at DailyTechNewsShow.com, will have to say about this. We just didn't get in touch with him before the show. I don't know what I was thinking, but we'll find out from him because he actually was a Uber and Lyft driver. I believe he still probably does it from time to time, but it wasn't enough for him to keep going. He had to switch careers.
Well, and we talked recently about the idea that Uber and Lyft drivers can get around some of the restrictions that the apps are trying to put on people so that they don't stay up too long and drive too long and make it unsafe for themselves and others. There are ways around that. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that if you were making the money that you wanted to make, you wouldn't be driven to you know, potentially put yourself or somebody else in danger because, you know, what you're bringing in is...
Yeah. We don't want to overrepresent. I don't think too many of the drivers, as we heard from emailers, too many of the drivers want to go beyond those limits. But yeah, that is something out there to consider as well. Hey, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit, submitting stories and voting on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We've got some great conversations going on at the Facebook group as well, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. And let's check the mailbag. Sarah, what do we got?
This comes from Joe. He's a solar engineer who says, I had to write in about the teacher from Ghana, as this region is the same region that we are working in to put in solar microgrids. Our office is in Kumasi, which is the major city nearest to where Richard Appiah Ekoto, sorry if I'm getting all this wrong, teaches. This is not just a digital divide. There are many schools and villages without electricity just 1 or 2 hours from Kumasi. Also, on a side note, it's actually home to one of the best technical universities in Africa, the Kwame Nkrumah Institute, University of Science and Technology. Despite obstacles, some students, hopefully many of them, will go on to university. They'll probably have to use a computer. So the students of Richard's have this visual as a desktop where you have a little preparation, at least. However, crazy to me that these students have to pass an ICT exam without access to electricity or a computer at all. And then he goes on to explain a little bit more about what's going on there. But yeah.
And he's got a picture of one of the local classrooms, outdoor air classrooms near him. And this all goes back to the teacher we were talking about yesterday who took a picture of himself, you know, explaining Word for Windows on a blackboard because he didn't have a computer to show people on and just the ingenuity that took. So thank you, Joe, the solar engineer. Also, I was saying Quadwo. Apparently, it's pronounced Kojo, like saying Jojo twice, but with a K.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So thank you, Joe.
Yes, thank you, Joe. And also thank you, Brian Brushwood, who you said in the pre-show before we got going with the show that you have not been on DTNS in over a year. How is that possible?
Well, the way I found out was I was like, well, let me go to Google Drive and call up, it says 2016. And I was like, where's 27? I haven't been on in a very long time. So thank you for having me, guys.
Of course, of course. Let folks know where they can keep up with everything that you've been doing since you were last on the show.
And you know what? The Modern Rogue was not a thing last time I was here. We've got a brand new channel on YouTube. It's the stuff I'm most proud of that we've ever done. If you enjoyed hacking the system and you just want to see us do dumber, more insane experiments and explore science about becoming a gentleman, warrior, and scoundrel, check out youtube.com/modernrogue. And of course, we now have daily articles every single weekday at themodernrogue.com.
Excellent. Not only is there Modern Rogue, but Modern Rogue now even has a website. Since the last time we had you on.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Format. As a matter of fact, you may have heard that a whole bunch of people got hired or got fired from cracked.com, and cracked.com has been an incredible site that has amazing articles. And it turns out that one of the folks there has been a fan of my stuff just as I've been a fan of his. So I'm trying to hire as many of the Cracked alumni as possible as fast as I can, because we'd love for all of them to find a home over at themodernrogue.com. But all of that depends on you guys, if you like it.
And they make more than $3.37 an hour. Just...
Hey man, I don't want to copper their time. All right.
Hey, thanks to everybody who supports our show at patreon.com/DTNS. That is the only way we keep the show going. Well, I say it's the only way. It is the main way. We also have a store though. If you like shirts to cover your body, or coffee mugs that you can drink anything out of. They're called coffee mugs. You can put whiskey in there or water or whatever you want. And they all say Daily Tech News Show. We've got the old logo and the new logo, and we're always adding new things in there. So go check it out, dailytechnewsshow.com. Real quickly before we're out of here, I want to mention Jason, the academic advisor at Antioch High School in California, who is a proud Patreon member. And the advisor for the anime convention called Asahi. The Anime Society of Antioch High is unique because it is completely student-run. And this year, Asahi has invited both Justin Robert Young and Patrick Beja to be part of their show. Justin will be appearing live to play his two card games in our game room, and Patrick will be appearing online to talk about Overwatch and Nintendo gaming with our con-goers, says Jason. The cool thing is that we will be streaming these events live. We would love if you could help us out by giving us a shout-out or possibly making us a segment on your show. If not, we more than understand. Well, guess what? I did it. Shout-out. Here you go. You got to check out Asahi. It's the Anime Society of Antioch High. Thank you, Jason. And very cool that Justin and Patrick are to be a part of that as well.
Good acronym, too.
Yeah, delicious beer and now a great convention.
Mm-hmm. At sushi restaurants near you. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Please write us if you have questions, comments, you have some feedback on something we talked about, you want us to bring up something in the future, we would love to hear it. We're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
We will be back on Monday with Lamar Wilson as our guest. Have a lovely weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Whose laugh was that at the end?
I don't know. I'm unfamiliar with it.
Oh, that was weird. It was Brian, and then it was Brian. Almost
so much Brian.
Yeah, I don't know why I said I haven't been on the show for a while. I've been on every
You're
single
pretty episode. Much on every day. You're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's amazing.
Hey, man, that was so much fun.
It's, yes.
Good show, guys. Good show.
Let's not let it be so long. Let's make this a thing. Yeah.
Let's do it again next week.
Yeah. What are you doing next Friday, Brian?
I'm appearing right here, I believe, actually, because Dom will be here.
Yeah.
Might as well.
Yeah, in fact, I liked it so much, I'm going to come to you next time.
You're like, let me tell you what, kid, you got the goods. I'm coming out to Austin. Yeah. I'm going to live in
let's
your house.
Let's all go. Roger, let's go to Austin. No, I'm just kidding. Got to hold down the fort.
It's funny how much, as far as time management goes, how much having a new project allows you to justify all kinds of appearances and investments of time. Like now that I have something to bang the drum about with the modernrogue.com and the articles, it's like the answer is back. It was for a long time. The answer was always yes. And then at some point, the answer was, wait, why am I saying yes? And then it was like, what if I say no for a while? That's fun. And now I'm back to yes. Let's say yes all the time. Yes.
Yeah. I've definitely been through that cycle myself where it's like, ah, there's the yes. Then there's like, I want to say yes. Then there's like, I don't want to say yes. And then there's back to like, I think I can say yes again.
Well, I'll tell you what, I know you guys hang out for a little bit, but I've got a date with my lady. Would I be a bad guest if I peaced out?
No. Wife or daughter?
Hey man.
That's a little too much.
This time it happens to be my wife.
Tell Bonnie I said hello.
You are a bad guest, but you wouldn't be the first one.
No, you're not. You're not at all.
No, do you not know that all. My daughter is about to turn 14?
I know.
14 years old.
That's nuts.
Is that your oldest kid?
Yeah. Yeah. She's 14.
Brian's only baby daughter, as I first met her,
is
14.
As a former 14-year-old female, get ready.
I know.
You're gonna have a few tough years.
It's funny because like we're trying to have all those challenging adult kid conversations right now while she's still listening, and she's like, I don't want to talk about this, I don't like boys. I'm like, yet you don't like them yet.
No. Get don't like them today. Like,
you're gonna wake up tomorrow and it's gonna be just
I know.
Are you gonna be confused and mad? Why am I a female?
She's at that age where I don't know if she's become an adult yet, so to speak. You could tell like once
I'm sure
a month.
She's thrilled to hear this.
A hormonal surge, and it's you're like, wow, she's really irrational. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There were of course, every kid is different. In my experience, though, 14 through 17, rough stuff.
Yeah, it's also I don't know if it's an artifact of it being the 21st century or just us having. I assume a lot of this information was around 100 years ago, but just under different names. But you read these books on behavioral development, and there comes an age where it's appropriate for kids to start wandering away from the tribe and asserting their independence and refusing to cooperate and testing boundaries and all that stuff. And and when you read about it in an anthropological context, it makes it easier to accept in the moment. It's like I don't take it personally when she shouts at me saying this, that, or the other thing. Instead, I just it comes in and I was just like, oh, she's asserting her independence, she's testing boundaries, this is healthy for her age and where she's at right now. And so my job is to not overreact, because that's the only way I could screw this up, is by freaking out. But it's really hard sometimes.
I bet
she's smart enough to know the right buttons to push.
And it's different seeing it happen, even as a sibling or a friend or a brother or whatever, than it is having it happen to you, to have your daughter say those things to you. I can't imagine.
Mm-hmm.
That's different. That's a whole other set of patience.
Roger, how old is yours?
She just turned 3.
She's almost 14.
Yeah, she's almost 14. She's already pushing boundaries.
3 going on 14.
Disagreeing with us.
New Jennifer Garner movie.
But when you ask her, don't do that, she does it like don't pour out all the toys on the floor. And she'll take like 3 baskets full of toys and when she dumps it, she looks at me straight in the eye.
Right.
She's looking for the reaction.
Like a boss.
Yeah.
It's like,
so I'm like, she looked at you, didn't she, afterwards?
No, she just stares at me just with this like shit eating grin. And she's
like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Put me out on the street? You're not going to. I'm 3.
They're like scientists with no previous background. A scientist with no access to history's texts. Be like, well, I guess I got to figure out everything. Well,
that's what testing boundaries is, right? They want to see the cause and effect, and they want to do it repeatedly. Part of it for shits and giggles, but the other part to see like how far they can push it before I get upset, like really upset.
Which and how often does that happen? Because I don't really see you like lose it ever.
But I'm also not
your daughter.
It depends on how long I've been up.
Hmm.
Like if she's in pain and and she's screaming, it doesn't bother me. But if she's doing it on purpose to get her way, it bugs me.
He means it bothers him in a different way. People, he cares that she's in pain.
Her leg.
No, he doesn't get mad at her for screaming. Is what Roger's doing.
Well, I move from concern into anger.
Well, Brian, I know you got to go, but thanks, man. This was awesome.
Dude, thank you so much for having me. I will come back anytime. Let's not be shy about hanging out again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And have a nice date night.
Well, thank you very much. Bye, guys. I'm going to go see Auntie Donna.
Woo, have fun.
He's going to see who?
Auntie Donna, the Australian comedy troupe.
Cool. I've heard of them.
They are funny. They have been in this very room before.
Have they?
Yeah, they recorded a Night Attack episode with Brian and Justin right here.
That's cool.
They were in the Los Angeles.
Title?
Pick a title, any title. I picked Diet Phone. Because the conversation was too good to interrupt. But what else we got? Just, to spread the love around.
Well, we also had the voice shopping of a new generation. The record the once in a lifetime opportunity. Opportunity. Rovio's angry investors. I was trying to find one with the discussion topic. Let's see one. You want drives with that? I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. It's I'm wondering if you can combine everything, like all these gig economies, into like one full door-to-door service. Like, oh, I'll pick you up from IKEA and I will assemble your IKEA furniture. And then, you know, like, and I, while that's done, I will, you know,
get you, you dinner back. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Angry birds entering a pier to know. Light side of the phone. I don't know. I'm like, the thing I had with the light phone is, why wouldn't you just get a flip phone or a feature phone?
Well, I actually get the original light phone as an accessory. It's a little expensive, but I get it as like, you know what? I want to make sure I get calls, but I don't want to be tempted by my Twitter and Instagram. I just want to be in the moment, and I need longer battery life. So I'll have my calls forwarded to this small phone. It's great. Like, I actually can see that. I guess I see light phone too as the extension of, I also need text messages. But that's why I said, like, I wouldn't have done the, like, maybe driving, maybe this, because that's where it starts to be like, well, wait a minute. Now it's just a less functional phone. For $400, I could get one that does everything.
Yeah, no, I'm one of those people that will try to take something and make it last as long as possible. And so I had, like, the same Motorola flip phone for, like, 6 years. And people are like, hey, I can do this with my smartphone. It's like, I can't. But I can get calls and I can get texts. I don't know. It's really weird. Something like that. I just remember the conversations we had in Las Vegas with some of the Lyft and Uber drivers. Just cobbling.
You mean about the flight museum at the Las Vegas airport?
Yeah, that was. I guess that could be considered part tour guide for an extra 50 cents.
Or are you saying you'll miss those kinds of conversations?
No, I'm just
autonomous cars come.
Yeah, like because a few of those drivers were doing it to top out their regular work, which is
yeah. What you guys were almost discussing. Everybody I talk to is either supplementing or they're in between, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, I'm going back to school soon, or I'm in between jobs, or you know, that I rarely run into somebody who just does it all, like that's their job. And even those advertisements that you started to see for Uber, they bill it as like, so-and-so is a chef. And then after hours, he drives for a little bit to make a little extra cash. They really aren't billing it anymore as a thing like that you can just do and make money. And I, you know, Brian brought up a lot of good points about why maybe it's not as bad as 337 makes it sound, but it definitely isn't something you're going to, you know, be able to rely on to feed your family.
You know, in a way, I know it might, I don't know if this is the best analogy. It kind of reminds me of recycling. Like my dad used to make me recycle all the cardboard and glass and aluminum.
For money?
And you get money. It wasn't, you weren't going to live off of it.
Yeah.
But you were,
and it probably wasn't even making you much more than minimum wage if you spent,
well,
if you
counted all the time. It was definitely less than minimum wage, yeah, but yeah. It was like, you know, you have all this cardboard, you have all these glass, all these aluminum cans, you know, might as well get some value out of it.
Brian said they're rational actors. I almost went down that rabbit hole of like,
but oh no.
But are they?
I saw your eyes like, because you have that like, wait a minute.
Are they though? Are they all rational? They're probably more rational than I would give them credit for sometimes. Okay, well, I think I'm sorry,
I'm stopped talking.
No, of course, yes, you should stop talking. In fact, we should go so you can rest.
No, it was, hopefully it sounded okay.
Show was great.
At a certain volume, I'm like, I'm fine. I just feel uncomfortable not yelling because I am a natural yeller.
Well, stop yelling.
Well, yeah.
And we'll see everyone Monday with
Bye,
Lamar
Wilson. Everybody.
YouTube has stopped.
Okay, but the Patreon stream is still going. So, Sarah, now you can admit how you really feel.
Well, I just didn't, you know, I just didn't want to talk to the great unwashed, but the patrons, you know, you guys are my people, so thanks. No, it's no. Actually, it worked out pretty good.
Yeah. No, you sounded great.
Good. Yeah. At a certain volume, it's like this doesn't hurt at all. I could talk all day.
It shouldn't hurt at all.
It's just uncomfortable for me to like bring down the decibels because yeah. you know, you're just used to talking a certain way.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
how it goes.
We believe that whether you wash or not, you are important. But we thank you particularly, patrons. And we will talk to you
Don't tell them I said that.
On Monday. Bye.
Bye.